She's a real woman with a real life. She's someone you can relate to. Dawn Newton.
Welcome to the Dawn Newton Podcast. I am your host, Dawn Newton. My guest today is Jonathan Shapiro, lawyer, writer, author. He joins me today to discuss his book, How to Be Abe Lincoln, Seven Steps to Leading a Legendary Life. Jonathan's book reminds us that Lincoln wasn't just a figure carved in stone. He was a man, often a loner, who struggled, doubted, and yet rose to lead a nation through its greatest divide. In today's climate of political polarization, we're searching for heroes who can guide us with wisdom, humor, and courage. Jonathan reminds us that Lincoln's life still offers hope and guidance.
Jonathan Shapiro, it is a pleasure to be speaking with you. There's several interviews within this one, just your career, the experiences you've had in and around the law arena, Hollywood arena, all of that. But today we're talking about your book, your new book, How to Be Abe Lincoln, Seven Steps to Leading a Legendary Life. He's been your hero, someone you've admired from a very young age. How did at a young age did you learn about Abe Lincoln enough to know that I want to be like that guy?
I'm embarrassed to admit that my maternal grandfather, Abraham Mandelbrot from Lublin, Poland, gave me the false impression that Abraham Lincoln was Jewish. So as a little boy, I conflated the biblical Abraham with the presidential Abraham and had to be corrected. But my admiration was undiminished. So it's been a lifelong interest of mine and love. For whatever reason, I've just always felt not just an admiration, but a kind of a kinship with Abe Lincoln. Maybe because he was not terribly attractive. Maybe it was because he had a love of laughter, a sense that the world was mad. But he's sort of always been my North Star. Which is kind of hubristic to say, but we named our oldest son Abraham for a reason.
I love that. You know, and just reading in our talking points and doing my research for our interview, didn't realize there's been more than 60,000 books written on Abraham Lincoln. And as you write, well, here's another one, but this is different. This is an action. And there's lots of controversy and debates and things about who he was, what he did, which is not that. We're talking about his character. And I think as you write, you know, we need this information and these seven steps today more than ever. And I couldn't agree more.
Well, I had the good fortune of running into John Meacham this summer. And Meacham, of course, has written the most recent and I think best biography of Lincoln called And There Was Light. But as I said to Mr. Meacham, his book is 720 pages. And when I was reading it at night, I nodded off and the book fell on my chest and I thought someone was killing me. But, you know, my book is not that. And again, I said to Mr. Meacham, you know, not every one of the 720 odd pages of his book fly by. It's a great book, but it can be hard sledding. My intention was to add something to the canon of Lincoln books that I haven't found and I don't think exists, which is a how-to book. And it's really meant to give you the seven doable steps that Abe Lincoln took to be Abe Lincoln and that you can take and be better for it. And I am a fan of self-help books. I think there's something very American about improvement and self-improvement. Abe Lincoln was a big fan of self-help books. He read them. I talk about one of his self-help books that I don't think gets nearly enough attention that he not only read, but noted, annotated, and gave to Mary Todd to help her. You know, there's hearing you read the title, How to Be Abe Lincoln, Seven Steps to Leading a Legendary Life, makes me smile, because if I hadn't read it, I'd think whoever wrote it must either have a sense of humor or be out of his mind.
When did this idea come for you to write this book? What inspired that? Because the timing couldn't be better, and I'm curious what that was for you.
Well, it's a little sad. My wonderful father was in the process of passing away, and I had moved back into my childhood home and was helping my mom. My dad was a Korean War era veteran and kind of my hero also, and a real patriot. And it broke my heart a little bit how, I wouldn't say he was hopeless about the state of things in our country, but he was pessimistic. And so I have so many friends who I love and admire who have kind of given up on the political process. And I thought, you know, I, rather than curse the darkness, Abe Lincoln always tried to light a candle. And in my own small way, I wanted to do something. And so it seemed like this book was a good opportunity. I don't know if the book is going to win a Pulitzer Prize, but I'm really delighted that, that people say what you say, which is, gee, I'm so glad someone wrote a book like this.
Well, first, I sympathize, and I'm so sorry for your loss, because I know losing my father, I've been through that myself, and it's very difficult.
Abe Lincoln was a great comfort to me, of course, because Abe Lincoln experienced so much loss in his life. You know, I found it somewhat comforting to feel the gratitude that I had my dad for so long. You know, Abe Lincoln lost his mother when he was only 9 years old. Or I think about the fact that, you know, Abe Lincoln struggled with depression his whole life to the point where his friends thought he was suicidal, at least on two occasions, but he got through it. And he got through it with sort of having a Stoic's understanding that we're all going to go, but we also all have control in terms of what we do with it. And so I found this book to be, found writing the book to be incredibly therapeutic. I don't think I would have been able to get through the grief process with my dad if I hadn't been in the midst of finishing the edits on this book.
I can see how that would be comforting. I mean, it's just interesting how things show up at certain times that help carry us through that we would never think would have that big of an impact. So I can appreciate what you just said.
Oh, I'm glad. I you know, the other thing is, if you're getting a sense that I'm a person who has faith in higher power, I do, and so did Lincoln. Again, I talk about in my book that, you know, you can't be Abe Lincoln without faith. What made, I think, Abe Lincoln so pertinent and relevant to our times, Abe Lincoln never confused faith with fact, right? Abe Lincoln was, more than anything, and unusual even for a lawyer, governed by facts, factual understanding of what was the reality of the world he lived in. And, you know, in my book, I talk about the fact that one of the reasons we're in the situation we're in as a country is we've lost sight of how important facts are. And to be Abe Lincoln, you have got to be a person who lives by facts, not by opinion, not by emotion, certainly not by anger. And Abe Lincoln, and in the book, I talk about, and I try to give really concrete examples of what you can do to sort of get back to that fact-based living.
That's something that stood out in reading the book and the timeliness of it. And you had said that, you know, the darkness of our political climate, sometimes I feel like, or I do feel, the darkness of our humanity climate, facts and truth aren't celebrated, emotions and anger are. It's like, how did we get here? But I think it was a slow boiling pot that's been going on for a long time, quite honestly. And, you know, knowing that from the outside looking at all this, and it's like, you know, there's been 60,000 books on Lincoln. I admire him. I've watched the movies. I can't say that I've read a lot of books about him, but just the documentaries and who he was, just his, where he came from growing up. And like you said, he suffered a lot of loss. And a lot of people, for some of us, it would be like, how do I go on? How do I live through this? And how do I, you know, all the things, life questions, immortality. And then I look at today and I'm like, Jonathan, you might get, you know, you might get canceled over this book because you're
right
in today's society.
Well,
you know,
it's funny you say that. It's funny you say that. I am. I don't believe Abe Lincoln would. I don't believe Abe Lincoln would be on social media. And so I'm not on social media. For good or for ill, my children are, and my my beloved 22-year-old youngest son let me know that I did. Apparently, I have been canceled by those who objected to me appearing on MSNBC. Just the fact that I appeared on Morning Joe apparently convinced some people that I was somehow using Lincoln as a cudgel against people who don't like MSNBC. And that pleases me only in that it confirms my suspicion, which is we don't make a lot in this country anymore. We used to make steel. We don't make steel, but we make a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of rage. And I have to say, I've been on this beat for a long time. My first book came out in 2014 and was called Lawyers, Liars, and the Art of Storytelling. And in that one, I said that, you know, we live in an age where emotion has sort of become the crack cocaine of argument. We Lincoln lived at a time where fact and credibility were more important than emotion. But, you know, in the rhetorical triangle that supports all good argument, right? The three legs of that triangle, going back to Aristotle, are ethos, pathos, and logos. Every great argument has credibility, logic, and emotion. In the 19th century, during Lincoln's time, credibility and logic were king. Emotion was the least important leg of the triangle, the smallest, shortest. Today, it's become the crack cocaine of argument. And we've got to get back to a Lincoln-esque approach to the real serious problems we have and problems that will not be solved in anger and through emotion. I talk about the fact that in the book, I'm horrified that people will say to me something about their truth versus my truth. And they say it without irony. And I talk in the book about the fact that I think truth has a overinflated reputation. Truth. We put too much stock in truth. Because the thing about truth is truth can never change. And if it does change, it wasn't truth to begin with. And truth can never be proven. Truth can be based on faith. And one thing you have to say about our founding fathers, they knew that faith, as beautiful and important as it is, has no place in the public sphere because it can't be proven. Facts can be proven. And I truly believe that's why Lincoln was so obsessive about living by facts. And I quote his contemporaries, and I'm not making this up, who talk about the fact that it drove them crazy that Lincoln would not take an action until he had proven by fact to himself what the right thing to do was. And we don't do that anymore. Social media and the 24-hour news cycle make it very hard.
Yeah, I don't even know if you can call it news anymore. It seems just more like tabloid.
Yeah, you know, I talk in the book about, I give, like all great self-help books, right? I give exercises in the book that you can practice to become Abe Lincoln. And one of the things I say you should do is go on YouTube and watch an old Walter Cronkite newscast. Because news used to be 30 minutes of news that the reporters and the editors were hell-bent to make sure was factual. And there was zero opinion. There were no panel discussions with talking heads. There was no looking for the maybe unimportant story that has good video. It was just news. We lost a lot. I like what you said about the slow boiling pot. We lost a lot when we lost that sense of integrity in journalism.
The truth piece of it really stuck out to me with this in facts and feelings and to present facts. I mean, even today, you know, we label it a whistleblower, somebody that's exposing the truth, like, no, here's what's been going on. This is what right. You've been told, but here's the facts. It's like, that is not celebrated. You, I mean, lock them up and throw them in prison and lose a key for that particular person. And I'm just like, when did that happen? Right. When did telling the truth become our enemy or exposing things? Is it because we don't want our little lives disrupted and we might have to do something different within ourselves?
Well, so there are three sort of streams in my life that get me to this point. One, I was a history major and I have my master's degree in history. And to me, history is nothing if not fact-based. Then I became a newspaper reporter for 3 years. All I did all day was try to get at facts. And then I became a federal prosecutor for almost 10 years. And, you know, I never had to prove a case in a way where I had to prove the defendant was guilty based on truth. I had to prove that he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt based on facts. Lincoln was that way. You know, Lincoln was the kind of guy who, if someone told him that a crime was committed, he'd go to the crime scene himself and he'd walk the scene and he proved everything to himself before he tried to prove it to someone else. I guess because of my training, the minute I feel myself making a decision based on emotion or anger, I know I've gone the wrong way. Lincoln was that way. Lincoln was 100% that way. You ask a great question, which is, how did we get here? And I have to tell you, you know, we used to burn witches who offended our sense of truth. We used to blacklist people in this country because their truth about how government should work wasn't our truth. Unfortunately, we have a long and unfortunate history in this country and in the world of wanting to lock up and throw away the key those people who don't conform with what our sense of truth is. The only solution to it throughout history has been to return to an empirical world of fact. I mean, I have to say, you know, that the Middle Ages led to the Enlightenment because maybe Hegel, that old fella, is right, and history moves in cycles. And maybe we're in that cycle where fact gets lost to emotion, but I have no doubt that the wheel will turn and we'll return to fact because we've evolved as animals to be reasoning, fact-based organisms. It's the only way to survive.
Jonathan,
that makes me sound crazy as I say it out loud, but I actually believe that.
Well, and I'm curious, too, just the arenas that you've been in, practicing attorney, teaching law, journalism, producing some pretty iconic legal television shows, dramas, Blacklist, one of my favorites. How have you, which kind of reminds me a lot of what we're doing today, we need that character. But
James Spader. We need Alan Shore. We need Red Reddington. Absolutely.
Yes, we do.
Absolutely.
But how have you, because I'm sure throughout, and those are some pretty interesting arenas, very educated, calculated, intentional arenas. Has your faith or belief in how to be Lincoln, these seven steps, been challenged? Have you ever seen where you've maybe found yourself venturing away from these? Or I can't imagine you seeing people like how many, wow, here's how not to be Lincoln in those arenas and keeping that, staying true to yourself.
Wow, you touch upon a lifelong effort, right? It's in some ways, I'm the least Abe Lincoln person I know, which always, those who can't teach. I'm a baseball fan, and I'm always amazed how the teams I root for hire batting instructors who couldn't hit 200 in the major leagues. You know, just because I can't always be Lincoln doesn't mean I don't want to try and aren't better for the trying. In the book, How to Be Abe Lincoln, I say that one of the steps to being Abe Lincoln is to be willing to object to what you know to be morally wrong, even if it costs you personally and professionally, which I think is one of the main steps that made Abe Lincoln Abe Lincoln. It explains how he got to the place of, even though he hated war, being willing to wage the bloodiest war in our history to object and to stamp out slavery. I talk about specific examples in the book, at least two of them, where I failed to object to something that I knew was morally wrong. One of these happened when I was a kid, and 42 years later, it still eats at me. Nowadays, we call that sort of thing a moral injury. Lincoln was not a man who sustained them because Lincoln objected when he had to. Watching what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now for the last few years, I'm disappointed that so few of our leaders are willing to take the step that made Abe Lincoln Abe Lincoln, which is to object to what they know is morally wrong.
What stops somebody from doing that?
Fear. Status anxiety. You ask me, have I ever in my life the examples of people not being Lincoln? And I've given you examples of, my own examples of when I've not been Lincoln. I'm amazed that status anxiety seems to drive people to do things that they know are wrong, including staying silent. And status anxiety is the fear of what others will think of you, particularly people in your own tribe. I think people are so afraid to get out of the comfort of what their friends and colleagues and neighbors think that they've really denied themselves the chance of being legendary. You know, Atticus Finch, according to the American Film Institute, is the most popular hero in American cinema. Well, it's always struck me as odd because Atticus Finch loses the case. Not only loses the case, but his client's killed. Not only that, in taking the case, Atticus is kind of involving himself in an apartheid system. Yet we all love Atticus Finch because we know he's objecting to what he knows is morally wrong in a way that puts himself and his family in danger. And we know that that's a Christ-like, holy thing. I'm not a Christian, but I certainly admire people who are willing to martyr themselves for a cause greater than themselves. In my tradition, we look at someone like Rabbi Akiba, who allowed himself to be flayed alive rather than renounce Elohim. I guess objecting to a political leader because he's incompetent and corrupt isn't the same thing as being willing to be crucified, but you would think our political leaders see this as the same thing. And what Lincoln knew is that to be legendary doesn't mean being famous. Being legendary doesn't mean your friends love you. Being legendary means doing acts that are esteemed by people because they're virtuous in the classic sense. And being worthy of fame, not necessarily getting it.
What does it take to be Abe Lincoln today?
I think it's easier and more doable than people realize. Because to be Abe Lincoln means, first of all, to live by fact, and second of all, to realize we all are going to die. You know, Lincoln was a Stoic who was kind of obsessed with death, and he read the Stoic philosophers like Marcus Aurelius, and he had a very adult, mature understanding that he didn't have all the time in the world, and that while he was on this earth, he had an obligation to his higher power to make the world a better place. Not make himself rich, not make himself famous in the way we mean it now, but to make the world better for the people around him and to live by those virtues that made himself proud. Abe Lincoln was asked what kind of Christian he was, and he said he was the kind of Christian that he heard an old Hoosier talk about at an old church meeting. The Hoosier said, "When I do good, I feel good. When I think good, I feel good. That's the kind of Christian I am." And that's the kind of Jew I am. And that's the kind of atheist you can be. When you do good, and by good I mean you follow the classic virtues Lincoln followed, honesty, justice, community service, never going back on your word, objecting when something is morally wrong, learning how to love other people, even those people you don't like, learning to laugh, always being on the lookout to improve yourself. When you live that way and you just turn out the noise and the opinions of others, you will be legendary. I guarantee it. I can guarantee it because I'm a writer now. When I was a lawyer, I could never guarantee the result of a case. They would disbar me. But being a writer, you can guarantee things.
Well, and it's not about being perfect, and it's not about being a martyr, and it's not about, I mean, this takes a lot of strength to do these things. I mean, they all stand out to me, but I think that, you know, the truth and to improve, to always want to improve yourself. And even some of that moral, those moral decisions that we made that maybe we may have regretted at the time, it was our truth. But then as we get older, more wisdom, more experience, we learn things. And in that, that's growth. And then you get to pay that forward and help educate our youth or friends or whomever.
Right.
It's about that. It also using it today in current day time and how it's just so divisive, and that seems to be celebrated and encouraged, and the emotions. I would think somebody trying to be like Abe Lincoln might be lonely.
You know, there's a great book by a rabbi, but it's really for everybody. And the title of the book is The Lonely Man of Faith. It's a great book because you're right. Lincoln would have been lonely. You know, Lincoln was lonely while he was alive. A lot of Lincoln's time was spent alone, and he overcame his aloneness through collaboration. And I talk about that being one of the steps to being Abe Lincoln. You've got to learn how to collaborate with other people. Lincoln is a great role model because two of his greatest collaborations were with people who were just horrible. His law partner was a very mercurial alcoholic. And Mary Todd Lincoln, who I have to say I think has been mistreated by history, you know, was a challenge. And yet Abe Lincoln could not have been Abe Lincoln without his ability to collaborate with his law partner and his wife. The other step, again, that I think is so important, particularly in these violent, divisive times, you could not be Abe Lincoln if you didn't have the ability to love. And by love, I mean make the choice to see the humanity of every human being, including those who are criticizing you and who you disagree with. And in finding the humanity of them, learning to love them. In the book, my favorite Abe Lincoln quote, and the one that I think should be written on the doorposts of every public building in our country. Abe Lincoln said, "I do not like that man. I must get to know him better. I do not like that man. I must get to know him better." You know, until we learn to love each other because we're Americans, until we learn to love one another simply because we're the members of the same community, we can never be Abe Lincoln, but we can also never be the country that I think Abe Lincoln wanted us.
I think staying curious about people and what's going on around us and the timing and these actions. And I mean, just is what I do with my talk show, you know, I get opportunities to speak to people and topics that I would never, ever be exposed to unless I was doing this work, having to step back and be an observer to be, you know, and I find myself doing that more and more just with politics and people and behaviors. And it's all like a big snow globe that we've just shaken the crap out of. And we don't quite know what to make of it. And then it's like, how do we move forward? What do we do with this? And the timing of this book, like I said, and reading it restored my faith in a lot of things. I would have expected it to be maybe volumes, inches, and heavy. And it's not. It's very simple. Huh. It's kind of like the thing, you know, what we learned in kindergarten, can we go back to some of that? The simplistic, you know, just it's not hard to do, and it's available to anybody any walk
right.
of life.
Well, I so appreciate you saying that. I'm you know, I say in the book, you know, I quote Emerson, who basically says, you know, if I teach one person their own worth, or if I remind one person of their own worth, then I've accomplished my goal. And part of this book is just I want to share my love of Lincoln with other people. So I'm delighted if the book had gave you that sense. I mean, I think for all his dark moments and funks, what Abe Lincoln was most of all was optimistic. And I guess I'm optimistic. I love that image you gave me of the shaking the snow globe. Part of being Abe Lincoln is embracing the chaos. Part of Abe Lincoln's greatness is loving stories and wanting to hear other people's stories and collecting those stories. Because when you hear a story from someone, particularly if it's their own life story, they become a part of your story. And in that way, we become connected. And I find there's a great loneliness in our country. You talked about the aloneness of trying to be Abe Lincoln. I think the whole country's lonely and desperate for connection. And if you take the seven steps in the book, you know, one of the secrets, I think, of the seven steps is the steps require that you get out of your room, get out of your living space, and connect with other people. You know, you can't collaborate alone. You can't learn to love other people without getting in the mix with other people. You can't learn to laugh unless you're and mixing with people. You know, all of the steps really demand that you connect with others. And I think that's the reason I've never really taken to social media. I don't find that connection to be genuine, authentic, and ultimately beneficial.
Jonathan, who is this book for? Who do you want reading this?
Well, I wanted my dad to read it because here was a guy who was a patriotic American who was losing faith. So I guess I want those people to read it. I definitely want people who, like me, love Lincoln, but maybe haven't seen him in contemporary terms presented in as, let's say, accessible way, right? You're not going to hurt yourself reading this book. It's something you can go back to. And I want people who really don't know anything about Lincoln, but want to know how to be better people. Because I think Lincoln understood that desire to better yourself, that dream of a better version of yourself. I think he understood that better than anyone who's ever been president.
And I love how at the back of each chapter, the exercises, it does make you stop and think and reflect, makes you question yourself, kind of interrogate yourself, if you will. You know, things that I always say to guests or is, you know, how did you come to that opinion? How did you form that belief? What were your experiences? Usually that kind of stops people in their tracks a little bit. Like, well, how did I form this opinion?
Yeah.
where did this come from? Or is it just whatever celebrities on social media or whomever, you know, staying in with the cool kids or whatever it happens to be. But it's like, does that really resonate? Is that really true? But then,
is it really a fact? Right.
And the fear of going against, of being ostracized, of being kicked out, of, you know, maybe losing monetary value, relationship value. There's so much there. And I think the risk of truth, people fear that a lot.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I'm not asking people, and Lincoln was not always, you know, looking for the grand gesture, right? Lincoln was made up of a million little steps. And the seven steps I talk about in the book really... Each step is a kind of umbrella to cover a whole bunch of things. You know, I talk in the book about if you want to be Abe Lincoln, you have to learn how to navigate, right? I talk about his experience as a riverboat pilot and about sometimes, you know, navigation, knowing how to get from where you are to where you want to go is both a metaphor for life, but it's also a real sacred skill that we've lost, right? Nobody can read maps anymore. If the GPS goes out on my phone, I'm lost. And Lincoln really talked about the value of his experience learning how to navigate on the Mississippi. And I give exercises in how to improve your ability to navigate, because I think so many of us feel lost spiritually, but just politically in every way. So you touch upon the exercises. You know, I want people to finish this book at least knowing there are things they can do, because I think that's hopeful. The other thing I do is I make recommendations for movies and books that I think are very Lincoln-esque that teach the steps that people can enjoy. And I, in answer to your question, I guess the movies and books that I refer to in my book are the things that form my opinions and sort of made me who I am, for good or for bad.
Well, and I think also can be said about Lincoln, he just lived his life. That's how he lived his life, and how we look back on this man and everything that he faced and experienced, you know, how did he navigate that? And I think today we're all looking for a hero, someone to admire, that has actually walked the walk and talked the talk, and we can, the proof is there, as opposed to somebody today that ultimately ends up disappointing us in some form or fashion once the facts start coming out. But
absolutely. And, you know, keep in mind, more than half the country, if you count the people in his own, in the North who disliked him, more than half the country hated Abe Lincoln. I talked, I have a podcast called How to Be Abe Lincoln, relating to this book. And in one of the episodes, I interviewed two teachers from South Carolina. And I asked them in 2023, what do their students think about Abe Lincoln? One of them talked very openly about the fact that his students in South Carolina don't like him. Popularity was never Abe Lincoln's strong suit, nor was it anything he cared about. Because like a Stoic, like Marcus Aurelius, like Seneca, like Epictetus, Abe Lincoln knew he can never control what other people think. And it's foolish and a kind of a sin to care about what other people think. It's not just wrong, it's not just unhelpful, but it's a kind of a sin, because you're letting forces that you have no control over determine who you are. That is a, you ask me what's the antithesis or what's the anti-Abe Lincoln? Anti-Abe Lincoln is anyone who cares how many likes they have or what someone they've never met before says about them on a social media site, or changes their position because someone's yelling at them. That's not Abe Lincoln. By the way, that used to be sort of an un-American approach to life. You know, I talk in the book that one of the things we've lost in this country is the sense that self-reliance is what makes us American. Emerson's great essay on self-reliance, the image of the pioneers going out to settle the West, the people who left England for religious freedom, they were all self-reliant. Ben Franklin, self-reliance. Helen Keller, self-reliance. Nowadays, it seems as if we would rather let other people think for us and come up with our opinions for us so we don't have to do the work. That is not legendary, and that is not Abe Lincoln.
Jonathan, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you. The book, How to Be Abe Lincoln.
Thank you.
Where can we find the book and learn more about you and your work?
Well, thank you for asking. You can find the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all stores where fine books are sold. You can also find it at the American Bar Association publishing site. You can reach me through my podcast, How to Be Abe Lincoln, 7 Steps to Leading a Legendary Life. You can go on the American Bar Association or the California State Bar Association, get my address, and send me a letter. I will always respond to written letters.
Well, again, it's been such a pleasure. I love this work, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for your time.
I enjoyed it. You're the best. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Don Newton Podcast, and a special thank you to my guest, Jonathan Shapiro, joining us today to discuss his book, How to Be Abe Lincoln. You know, Lincoln's life reminds us that even in moments of division and uncertainty, one person's courage, humor, and humanity can make a difference. I hope this conversation inspires you to find a little Lincoln in yourself, whether it's leading with integrity, leaning into your own solitude, or just trying to make sense of the world with a little more grace. The Don Newton Podcast is written, produced, and hosted by Don Newton.